Deadlands by Christopher Patrick. Read by James Gillis. Gordon's mind had switched to autopilot by the time lunch came around, his brain numb from the endless stream of paperwork that showed no sign of letting up. No matter how long ago the world had ended, the paperwork never stopped. If it weren't for the sudden rustle of sandwich wrappers or the tap-tap of stirring spoons, Gordon would have missed the lunch call altogether. Sliding away from his mahogany prison, he grabbed his lunch from the drawer, headed over to the office window, and looked out onto the Deadlands. The Deadlands seemed to stretch out forever, far beyond the tall wired wall of the Georgetown Sanctuary, and the endless stream of the dead it played host to. Looking out, Gordon felt strangely captivated by the dead, as they shuffled over the dirt, reminding him of a painting his grandmother used to own. It was a portrait of the end of the world, a cracked beauty that pictured life and death blurring together in one brushstroke. The Deadlands were reminiscent of this, and eerily so. The only difference was the endless stock of meat, bones, and dirt that the painting had failed to contain. Taking a bite of his sandwich, Gordon caught sight of his own reflection and was surprised at how different he looked. His face was drawn, and his cheeks, once plump, had made way for what could now pass as a strong jawline, while his dark, evenly kept head of hair was thinning, with flecks of grey. However, the thing that struck him most about his complexion were his eyes. His mother had always said that he had old eyes, looking out from young skin, but seeing them now it seemed that this mismatched symmetry had evened itself out. His face, as old as his eyes, had once been. It was this thought, and the memory spoiled, that made him force his gaze away from the window and onto the rest of the office, containing his fellow band of survivors. As always, Gordon was the only one wearing a suit, a fact that was met with a great deal of scorn from his colleagues, but their reaction wasn't something that bothered him much any more. There was a reason he wore the suit. It was the same reason he took two tea bags in his tea, wore an overly long barber jacket around the sanctuary, and allowed himself only one cigarette a day. He did all of these things because it reminded him of his father, and this made him feel safe. And safety was the only currency worth having in this new world, a belief that demonstrated how out of place he was here, which came down to one simple fact. He had no right being here. The sanctuary wasn't built for the likes of him. It was built for the 1%, for those whose names meant something or whose bank account meant more. And Gordon was neither. He was simply a guy who had been dating the daughter of an MP at the time of the outbreak, and she refused to go anywhere without him. Reluctantly, her father put Gordon's name on the list, and he was welcomed with open arms. That was until the relationship broke down, the apocalypse proving to be far from an aphrodisiac. A couple of years later, and he was well and truly the outcast. Gordon didn't like the way things were run here. He didn't like that safety had come down to nothing more than inheritance, and he'd made his opinion known several times at the community meetings before they stopped letting him attend. He was of the view that survival wasn't a birthright, and he wanted to open the doors to those still out there fighting for their lives, offering the sanctuary to whomever, no matter their circumstances or background. In his protestations, he'd made a fair few enemies. The nickname, the lobbyist. It was only a matter of time before he was thrown out onto the Deadlands and given over to the shufflers, particularly given the number of new enemies he'd collected recently. He had rejected the planning permission for zombie firing ranges within the walls, the invention of a new sport called Match of the Dead, and a business proposal for a Deadlands tour company. He shuddered to think what would happen if any of these were approved, especially the plans to obtain human heads for Match of the Dead. So he had turned them all down swiftly without a second thought or concern to what it may mean for his future at Georgetown. It wasn't the lack of humility or the indecency of the Georgetown suburbanites that bothered him. It was their lack of awareness, self or otherwise, Nothing of the outside world seemed to affect them any more. The wall separating the sanctuary from the chaos had created a seemingly impenetrable bubble that only Gordon seemed to be on the outside of. There was no shock or horror any more. There was just the mundane. It was like the world was still turning, just as it had been, the dead rising, nothing more than a generational shift, akin to the swinging 60s, a changing trend to become accustomed to, and another expense to budget for. Apparently Gordon was the only one here left unadjusted to this new order. Nobody saw the problems the apocalypse created. They saw only opportunities for a new game, a new piece of merchandise, or a new way to provide entertainment to their closed-off little world. Last Christmas had been one of the final straws for Gordon. One of his colleagues, Donnie, a man who insisted on calling Gordon G-Man, and despite everything still only concerned himself with the three B's, beer, bitches and ball games, had brought into the office a shuffler they had captured, dressed him in full Father Christmas regalia, and hung him from the ceiling with a set of Christmas lights, illuminating the swinging corpse like a piñata at a David Lynch party. Gordon shuddered at the memory, staring at the spot on the office carpet where a sack of meat and bones had once dripped blood and flesh. And the thought of the poor cleaner. Her name may have been Margot, who had been left to clean it up later that same night. She who strayed too close, not realizing the shuffler hadn't been put down, and was still very much alive. That had been a dark time, even for the end of the world. And it was standing, hands clasped together and head bowed, that Gordon had decided that things needed to change here, and that he would be the man to do it. Gordon was so busy thinking about his place in Georgetown, Donnie's Christmas cadavers, and the ill fate of Margot, that he didn't realize the crowd that had gathered around him at the window until he heard them gasp, derailing the train of thought he'd embarked on. Following the gaze of his colleagues out onto the Deadlands, he thought for a moment that the audience had formed to watch another game of shuffle streak, the rules of which were to run through the Deadlands without a stitch of clothing on and attempt to come back wearing that of a shuffler, until he saw what it was they had gathered around for. Until he saw them. It was a young family, slap bang in the middle of the Deadlands. There were four of them, the daughter, about 16, and her younger brother, no older than 8 or 9, were wedged in between their parents as they slowly made their way across the burned ground, Georgetown only a few well-placed steps ahead of them. Gordon's heart picked up the pace as he watched them, quickly crossing his fingers and muttering a quick prayer to whatever God was listening. All work had stopped in the office now as everyone gathered around the window to watch. The family hadn't yet been spotted, moving at a snail's pace. No need to run, no need to rush. The phrase, slowly, slowly, catchy monkey, echoed in Gordon's ears as he did his best to ignore his colleagues, who, with Donnie leading the charge, had started making bets as to whether or not they'd make it across, and who'd be the last one standing. The little bit of hope that had filled his heart seconds ago vanished, to be replaced with a feeling of sick climbing up the back of his throat and a mounting sense of dread that was made only worse as he turned back to the window to watch events unfold. In the end, it was the boy who was the last one standing. The thing that Gordon would never forget was that the boy didn't look scared or upset. He just looked lost, confused. He was probably waiting for his dad to get back up and lift him the rest of the way, or for his sister to get up and tease him for being too slow, or maybe he was just waiting for his mother to hold him close and tell him everything would be all right. He probably didn't know what was happening as the cloud of corpses floated over and began to shower down him like dead rain. The office was silent as they watched the boy being torn apart, the only sound coming from money as it exchanged hands. Everyone went back to work with pockets as empty as their souls. But Gordon stood there for some time in a daze, still staring out of the window as the cloud got up and moved on to their next feed. Memories of the bedtime stories he grew up with came back to him then, the ones where the heroes saved the world and rescued those in danger. He realized now finally that these were just stories, after all. War isn't won by bedtime stories, he thought. No, it wasn't. The reality was very different. Reality was people betting on a life and watching death as a sport. Reality was that Gordon's plan to change things in Georgetown had just caused the death of 4 people. As Gordon continued to gaze out, he didn't know whether he was grieving the family, the death of his heroic plan, or because he was the reason that the family had gotten there in the first place. There was no question that it was because Gordon had leaked the Georgetown coordinates to those beyond the wall that the family had found themselves stranded in the middle of the Deadlands. There was no question that in his foolhardy act of bravery and nobility, when he had sent a message beyond the walls, it was easy, they still had electricity and Wi-Fi. What more do they need to survive to tell the world that there was a safe place for them? A place they'd be welcomed with open arms. He had sealed the fate of anyone who would try and brave the Deadlands for the opportunity to enter Georgetown. He thought then of the father he'd just seen torn to shreds, and his wasted sacrifice. Wishing more than anything that he could trade places with him, away from the world of desk-bound dreamers he lived in, and foolish acts of heroism that got people killed. But instead, Gordon went back to work, his heart weighing heavy as he took his seat, slid out another form from the pile of mounting paperwork, and let his brain go numb again, telling himself that at least he had tried. At least he had made the effort. And that was enough. Right?